really what the value in that industry for me was the relationships. You know, I just take the haircutting out of it. It was just
connecting
like
with people,
being able to connect with people, man, and just build those relationships is added so much quality to my life.
Real business owner. Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
You want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be successful, don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
Welcome back to the Real Business Owners Podcast with myself, Trevor Cowley, and my dude, Kel Goodman.
What's up?
And then we got Big Donnie D in the house.
The Big
bro.
D.
Big D. Yeah. You know, and the nickname, Suits. He wears that, wears it well. Big Donnie D.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I feel like
he went into his romantic like, voice for that.
Oh man.
You know what's funny,
you
man?
You should put whoa before that. Oh, whoa, man.
Yeah. I feel like this podcast, there's so much build up for this episode.
Oh my God. Well, it's almost like you showing up somewhere on time. This podcast is late.
He said last night, my wife sets all our clocks in the house 10 minutes fast.
So she does. Anyway. She does.
We should set the world a year fast. Because this was supposed to happen, I think, last March.
Yeah.
And here, or I guess 13 months because it's now April.
Yeah, story of my life.
I thought you were going to April Fool's us today, April 1st. Man. Like, hey, Donnie's coming up. 30 minutes later, no Donnie.
Yeah.
You know what?
April Fool's. I held out because I knew there was something better. You know? And so now, I mean, how could you not appreciate the scene, right?
So yeah.
In front of the beach. No. And
yeah, in front of the beach and in Mexico. St. George ain't so bad, though. No, come on, man.
Yeah.
Got to give us a little bit of credit over there. We got Red Rocks, not quite. Cool waves, though.
Yeah, it's meant to be today.
It is.
Yeah.
So let's crush it.
And plus, you've done a lot since then. Before, you had launched your new book. Now you've got a new book out. It's an amazing book. It's already been a top seller.
Yeah.
You know, like, dude, a lot of people can't say that, dude. You're number one bestseller.
I know, man. You know, what's crazy is so many things have transpired in that year, man, just from connecting with you guys and joining the mastermind and launching the book. It was funny. Last night, we went out and I was like telling somebody that was talking about writing a book. And I was like, man, I actually sell like 1 to 4 copies a day, which is, I never expected that. Like, you know, obviously when
even after your launch, and that's really good, dude.
Yeah. I sell more now.
Yeah.
Right. And so I pulled up KDP, you know, for Amazon to check my stats because I haven't even looked the last couple of weeks. And sure enough, man, there was like book sales going through the weekend. I was like, man, that's awesome. So,
well, what that says then is that it's resonating with people and people are talking about it.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't happen otherwise, right? It's not like you're sitting there doing a big push every single day to get book sales every single day.
Yeah.
I was at the gym last week and there's like a barber shop inside Fitness Culture or whatever.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I was talking to a dude and he said that, cause there's a guy that gets his haircut that's in our inner circle, Alex, and he talked about you.
Oh, is that right?
To him. And he's like, he gave me a recommendation to buy this book about barber, like six figure, whatever.
And I was like, barber.
He's like, I'm gonna buy that. I'm gonna look into it.
Yeah.
So it's like just kind of starting to get out there a lot more organically, right?
Yeah, it really is, man. You know what's funny too is a lot of barbers talk about that. Like that's the pinnacle, right? Like, make six figures. And when I thought about the book, I was like, it's really not about six figures.
Yeah.
It's about the things that you do day in and day out that lead you to being the type of person that makes six figures, you know? And I think that's something that's overlooked. And, you know, obviously you guys understand it because you're pretty high performers, but that's why the book was The Habits of a Six-Figure Barber, because it really is about the habits, man.
Yeah. It's about the individual that you need to become in order to earn the type of money that you want to earn, right? Yeah. And really the reward is who you're becoming. And it's just, I guess, cherry on the top to be able to be a six-figure barber. So is that like the talked about thing is like, man, I want to be a six-figure barber. Like that's like the upper echelon. Is that why, or is there barbers making way more than that? Or,
you know,
what's
there,
like
there
the
are
average income of a barber. I don't even know that.
You know, what's funny, man, is like going back in time. And like, I remember when people used to talk about like barbers making over 100 grand. And at the time when I wasn't making 100 grand,
yeah,
I was like, there's no way. Yeah. There's no way. Cause I was making like 50,000 a year.
It was some pipe dream.
Yeah. But once you, you know, once you hit that number, obviously it's you understand how easy it is to achieve it. It's also easy not to achieve it, right? If you're not doing the right things. But I think that it's like a big push right now is like everybody's like earned six figures, you know. It's actually really easy to do as a barber.
Yeah.
But
if you're willing to show up and work.
Yeah, yeah. Right? But it, but it's really like, and you guys understand this, but in anything, it's not really the talent. It's like you could be a killer salesman, but if you're not showing up to get on the phone or like you were talking about the other day, knocking doors, right? Like that's really what the result comes from is the stuff you're putting in day in and out. The talent's like meaningless.
Yeah. You know? Well, I mean, we were talking just the other day, Luke, our videographer, he's like, man, like over at this barber shop, he's like, it's weird here in Utah. They work like just kind of 9 to 5.
Yeah.
And in Chicago, they work more like, you know, 12 to 11 o'clock at night because they're like trying to cater when people get off of work. Yeah. And he's like, in Utah, some of the barbers are out here working like from 12 to 3 or whatever. They'll cut three people and like that's just good enough, right? Yeah. Rather than stretching themselves, opening their schedule and getting ahead versus just kind of utilizing it as a tool just for the necessities of getting by.
Yeah.
Right.
Different cultures.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like it was in Utah, they're just, it's kind of something to do to make a couple bucks to survive. Well, and in Chicago, they're out there like hustling.
I notice in big cities, man, like the culture is just different than what we're used to in our like hometown. Yeah. Right. It's like people are excited to like go out and even work late at night and stuff. Yeah. Like it's like they look forward to it. Like in our hometown, bro, it's like, we just want to go home to our family. It's like family home evening. And
It's like an energy thing. Like in Utah, the energy starts dying in the evening and the cities is like, life starts happening when the sun goes down.
But even look at where we're at right now, right? Like I've been blown away. Last night, we went and got some tacos.
Yeah.
And it was late at night. And
some?
Yeah, yeah.
How many tacos yesterday did you eat in total? It was up to
like 15 or something.
Well, no, the record they said was 15. I stopped at 18. And then
that's this is after.
Yeah, that. Yeah. We went and got tacos later last night.
Yeah, they went and got tacos. That's what I'm saying. Like, how many total yesterday?
Bro, I can't 25 eat any more. Yeah, I can't eat any more, put it that way. But we're sitting there eating tacos, right? Yeah. And it's late at night. We're sitting outside and these little kids, right?
They're
out hustling. They got roses. They're like coming right in your face. And and I asked the kid, I said, you know, I was like, in Spanish, I was like, how old are you? He was like, I'm 6. And I was like, wow. And then I was like, and then this one, they had like, no, he was 9. I take that back. He was 9. And then he had his other brother with him who was 12. And then the little girl, and I was like, is that your sister? And he was like, yeah. I was like, how old is she? And he's like, she's 6. And then I was like talking with one of the guys and I was like, man, isn't it amazing the hustle that they have? Mm-hmm. And it's not even like, it's just who they are. Can you imagine that type of work ethic like over here? What you could accomplish, but it's cult, like you said, depending on where you're at, the culture is just different. You
know? It is, man. I noticed that whole industry's got crazy culture though. It's like tattoo artists to me. Like, like they work late and it's like all about like being innovative and upping your skills. Like it's really not like, you know, you're creating the habits of a 6-figure barber. Like there's not a lot of people that I've met like in the tattoo industry or the barber industry that are like that worried about like getting to 6 or 7 figures, right? Like they want good lives, they want good income, but it's like, I noticed there's like a huge passion for like what they do, but there's also like innovation and like new techniques and new skills. And like, you know, it's kind of compare those two industries, like tattoos and
the barber industry is just really taken off. I mean, it's like a, 20, 30 but do you see more people
get into it for the money, or do you feel like people get into it for like that creative passion?
I think what happens right now, it's huge. It's blowing up.
Yeah.
People are drawn to it because of the sexiness of it. A lot of people are.
Yeah.
And then there's a group of people that are drawn to it because they think it's an easy way of work. Mm. Like, oh, I get to be my own boss. I don't have to, I could work my own hours. They're going to it for the wrong reasons. And it's actually the exact opposite.
Yeah.
You have to work harder because nobody's holding you accountable. Mm. Right.
Yeah.
Have to have more discipline.
Yeah, it's really blown up. You know what's crazy, man? And I never really talk about this, but there was a point, I would say like 5 years into my career, I was actually embarrassed because I was a barber, you know, and like all my buddies had went off to college and, you know, I went to barber college.
You thought you were doing something less than what they were?
I think
by doing that or what?
You know, I think at the time I just wasn't as confident with who I was that like understood that it was something that was special that I was doing. It was unique. And I was like embarrassed to tell people that I was a barber. They'd be like, oh, well, what do you do? Cause all my buddies be like, oh, well, I'm going to this school. My wife's in law school. And I was like, well, I cut hair, you know? And
I remember doing that too. I'm a telemarketer.
Yeah. It was like, I downplayed it. It's like now it's like,
I'm a business sales rep for, you know, like you would try to like jazz it up.
Yeah. And I, you know, again, you know, part of it was, I wasn't as confident with who I was at the time. And I had to go through some personal transitions in my life to really understand that industry. And I mean, it's been so rewarding for me, man. And I think for me, and I always talk about this, is that really what the value in that industry for me was the relationships. You know, I just take the haircutting out of it. It was just
connecting
like
with people.
Being able to connect with people, man, and just build those relationships is added so much quality to my life. You know, I mean, and now obviously, I mean, we continue to do that, you know, and just, and that's pretty much how the world works, man. It's like, how well are you at, how good can you establish relationships with people? You
know? The relationship currency is there provided you're actually vested and you understand how important that is, right? Yeah. There's probably a lot of people that are just like,
Well, and like going back to
more transactional saying, rather than relationship. Right. Yeah.
Well, and going back to what Kale was saying is like this, you know, attractiveness to this industry. And if you get on like social media, most of the guys are so caught up in the haircut and like it's about them and how many likes they can get on the picture. And, you know, and it has nothing to do with the person in the chair. Where that's where the real currency is.
Yeah.
Is in the value in the person that's sitting in your chair exchange. Because if I give you a haircut, it grows out in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But if I can build a relationship with you and create some sort of impact in your life, that lasts forever.
Yeah.
You know?
So tell people a little bit, you know, about what you do because you own a barber college, right? Yep. So you're taking this thing that you did at one point and you're taking it to the next level by, you know, passing that on to other people, giving them the opportunity. And really that's kind of how the book came about, right? Like Habits of a Six-Figure Barber, because it wasn't just about you. It was about serving students, right? And you love like pouring into people, pouring into students, teaching them the old handshake, right? With the look a man in his eye, like versus bowing your head. Like we were talking about that yesterday. You're like, dude, put a dollar in the jar if you don't stare them in the face when you shake their hand.
Yeah.
You know, really just teaching life to these kids, right?
I think, you know, for me, I almost got out of the industry. You know, I actually went back to college and got a bachelor's degree at one point, and I was going to get out of it altogether. And in the process of doing that, I opened my own shop. While I was in the process of transitioning out, I opened a shop so that I can, like, have a flexible schedule to go to school and I fell back in love with it, you know? And then I really reflected on what my purpose was. And part of my purpose was, I believed that I was needed to make a difference in the industry. And I really didn't know what that meant. But I would say it like, I'm here to make a difference in the industry. And I didn't know what that meant. And there was a point, you know, several years ago where I actually reached out to you and, you know, when I was going to open the barber college. And I ended up moving to a whole nother state. You know, I moved to a state that hadn't had a barber college in almost 40 years and went for it, packed up my family, sent them out there. It was one of the hardest times of my life, you know, one of the deepest struggles that I've had to endure to figure out how to make this thing work. And it was right on the cusp of when COVID hit and start launching a brand new business, putting all the money that I had into it and sleeping on a inflatable mattress in a whole nother state while my family's in another state. It was,
why didn't you pick Utah, bro?
I know.
Could have just,
we could have linked up sooner, man.
Yeah.
But you know, like in saying that I was there to make a difference, I started seeing how it was unfolding Yeah. You know, and here I am moving to a state where they needed the industry. It was on its way out.
Yeah.
I get there. I open the school. I start getting involved in legislation and getting laws implemented and some changed and making it more easier for barbers to thrive in the state. Yeah. And so, and now it's growing right now.
Yeah.
Now we're doing it at a bigger capacity, right? Because now, you know, obviously I have the book that now can reach more and more people.
Yeah.
You know, and so it is making a difference in the industry.
Well, dude, like, share a little bit about how you opened the school, though, because what you shared yesterday was super powerful in our mastermind. It's because there's a lot of people that that listen to the show because they want to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Okay. And then obviously we got a ton of people that are in entrepreneurship that will really relate to it. But how you actually started, because you sold your first few like students before you even had it open.
Yeah, and you know what's funny, man, is I'd never done...
He laughs at me. Yeah. He's like, Kel, don't bring that up.
You got to run some game to get open.
He just stroked
my
ego, man. I was just sitting tall. Well, you know what's...
That's me.
I didn't really know what I was doing, to be honest. Yeah. I was just surviving.
Yeah.
And I've been a survivor my whole life, right? And so it was just like a different challenge, a different survival that I had to make work. And... because number one, I didn't have all the money to open the school.
Yeah.
I really didn't know how I was going to open the school. But what I did is I had a marketer that was running some marketing campaigns for my barbershop back home. And I was like, hey man, I'm going to open this barber college. Can you run some ads for me? He's like, well, let's do a test campaign. Yeah. And I was like, well, let's just go for it. You know, let's just run it, you know? And he's like, well, in marketing, you got
to
do
it. I don't have time to test, pal.
Yeah.
Like, we have to make it work.
Every salesman that turns into an operator of a business is like that. They're like, okay, dude, just get me leads.
Yeah.
Like, we're doing this.
So we run a campaign across the entire state. And I was like Googling photos off of, you know, I was pulling pictures off the internet. I called my graphic guy. I was like, hey man, so I found this picture. It looks like it's in a barber college. Can you like mock up a barber college logo on their shirt? He's like, yeah, man, I got you. So we started mocking up all of these photos that looked like there was a barber college in existence.
Photoshop my head on that.
Yeah. And I was like taking pictures with I went and got shirts embroidered with the barber college name on it. And again, I don't even have anything yet.
Yeah.
I don't have anything. I don't have a building.
That's not true. You have an image that was pulled off of Google.
Yeah.
That says you have a barber college and now you have a shirt.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Those are the first two steps towards the business.
I had a shirt and I had a logo.
Yeah.
And an idea. And so we start running these ads and I think I put like a couple grand into the ad campaign. And I started getting a ton of leads, like hundreds of leads. Mm. And keep in mind, I've never sold in my life.
Yeah.
And I was flying back and forth between California and South Dakota.
Yeah.
You know, my wife, who we had one child at the time and she was pregnant with our second. She's living at my mother-in-law's house. I'm still back home in California running my shop, just grabbing as much cash as I could. I would fly I was just back and forth, man. And so we started getting all these leads. And I remember sitting in my mother-in-law's basement. I mean, it was like in my mother-in-law's basement. I had my headset on and I just had a stack of papers. And again, I've never sold, but I was doing the things that I thought I needed to do. And like, I wrote a script because I didn't know what to say. And at the time, I didn't know it was a script. I just wrote down the things that I was going to say. Yeah.
You were like, you know? Probably nervous. You're like, I need some structure to this.
Yeah. But I came up with the script, you know, and it was like all the things I was going to say, the questions I was going to ask. And I didn't even really realize it, but what was I doing? I was qualifying them.
Yeah.
Right. And it was just simple things like when do you plan to attend? If you got accepted, do you have enough money to make a down payment? You know, can you make between 500 and whatever that was? Anyways, long story short, I ended up signing up like 7 people. And I think my goal was like 3 people because I was like, okay, 3 people, if I can get 10 grand out of each, that's 30 grand. That would get me through this part of the build out for the school. And then I'll just figure out the rest later, you know? And I ended up getting 7 students. And now I had to create an application, right? So I had a, so I like go back to my laptop and I create an application, and my mother-in-law thinks I'm nuts. She's telling my wife, like, man, like this dude,
what's
is
he doing in the basement?
Yeah, like they're probably thinking I'm like a con man, right? Yeah. Cause I'm now I got this application that I just created.
It's like on Catch Me If You Can. He like, you're down there like creating all this shit. Yeah,
and I had a PO box. I got a PO box in South Dakota to the UPS stores cause I wanted an address, right? And I'm in California. And so I'll never forget. It just so happened that I was in South Dakota at the time when we got the first applications back. And I actually even made the people pay for the application because I wanted people that were serious, right? So I charged 75, 25? No, it was 75 bucks. So I'm up there. I go check the post office box or the UPS box. And there's two envelopes in there, you know, South Dakota Barber College. We open them up. And my wife and I, man, we never celebrated so hard. It was 150 bucks, you know, and that was the first money that we made. And I mean, you would have thought that like we just hit the lotto. We were jumping up and down and celebrating. And I think for me, man, I'm getting the goosebumps saying it right now. But for me, that's when it really clicked, like how taking an idea from a thought and just by taking action on it, you can actually create, you know. And I think a lot of us stop short of that because maybe we have an idea or a thought on something, but we never really pursue it because the
obstacles.
Yeah. You start seeing them all.
Yeah.
And then I still do it today. Yeah. Right. I still do it, but I'm better at like sort of navigating through and recognizing, but, it was a fun journey, man. And a lot of growth took place, and obviously COVID happened. Like we opened March 10th. And
next week, shut down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was funny. They actually denied me opening. And you know, like when you're trying to pursue something at that magnitude, the world just throws everything at you, you know? And like, I remember they came from the state board to look at the school, and they go, we can't approve the school because you're not even finished with the build out. And I was like, well, I got the classroom done. Can you at least just approve the classroom? That's it. Like, we'll just stay in the classroom.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And we went back and forth, and they approved the classroom. So I opened up March 10th, and the students had to stay in the classroom. And like in the meantime, there's guys out there swinging hammers and, you know, putting the whole school, doing construction on the floor. And again, you know, March 17th, COVID hit. And at that time, you know, we really didn't know what was going on, but, it was just like one thing after another. But you know, it was funny, and I really don't talk about it much, is when the COVID thing was first going on, I had that moment where I was like, you know, I could like throw in the towel right now.
Yeah, nobody would blame you.
Yeah,
you have a full on excuse.
Yeah, dude, I was like entertained. Yeah. I was like, man, I could quit right now, and like
didn't work because of COVID.
Yeah.
And an easy out. Yeah,
man. It's weird how that came up. And then it was just like a fleeting thought, you know? And then obviously I turned into it, you know?
Yeah.
But, man, it's crazy how those things evolve. But I feel like for me, man, I've been a survivor my whole life, man. And I think, you know, it's kind of weird because I've sort of embraced that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked a little bit about, you know, my childhood, and my dad was a heroin addict. And you know, when you grow up in that kind of environment, you know, you're exposed to a lot of things that you have to really, you know, you're not like nurtured, you know. It's like, I mean, I could remember probably one of my earliest thoughts, you know, I was probably like 3 years old. And I remember specifically sitting in my dad's car, and I had my two sisters on, and I had like, you know, the little pajamas with the zip up in the back with the feet, you know, and we're sitting there, it's nighttime, and obviously past our bedtime, and we're waiting on my dad. And I remember, like, at some point, you know, I'm starting to get scared, you know, like, and I want my dad. And I tell my sisters, like, well, I got to use the bathroom, you know, because I felt like if I could get her to, like, go find my dad.
Make some sort of motion.
It would change. And so I'm telling my older sisters, I was like, I got to go to the bathroom. And so my middle sister started like co-signing on it. And so then the two of them are talking. And then finally my oldest sister was like, well, I think I know what house he went in. And so there's like people walking around on the street, and it's night. And obviously looking back at it, it was a rough neighborhood.
Yeah.
So my oldest sister was like,
they could have been doing 75 hard, bro.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
They're out on their late night walk.
Yeah, maybe they're out selling roses. Yeah,
no, hell.
This is in California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so my oldest sister like comes up with a plan, right? And so she tells us when to go. We open the door and we just book it down the street to the house that we think that my dad went in. And I remember walking up the driveway and like looking up at this house, and there's no lights or anything. And we're looking up this long driveway, and there's not even a door on the front of the house, you know? And so we walk up and we walk in, and there's absolutely zero lights on in the house. We're trying to like look around, and it's like an abandoned house, you know? We're like walking through and look, and I remember turning in this room, and the only reason you could see was because there was no curtains on the windows, but with the light coming in from the outside, the moon or the stars
street
or whatever,
light, whatever,
you could just see the silhouettes of people in the room.
Yeah.
And we're calling for my dad, and this commotion starts, and like people are getting up and moving around, and they're like, what are there's kids in here? And we kind of get ushered into this other room, and I remember my dad coming in there, and he was like pissed off.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, I thought I told you to wait in the car. And you know, I remember grabbing him. We're scared, you know, we just want our dad. And he didn't really want us to see what we saw, you know. And what we saw, we were in a crack house.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was people in there with, you know, needles slammed in their neck and arms. Ugh. And, you know, and I wouldn't change any of that, because I feel like that's kind of led me to who I am, you know. Like, again, I used to be embarrassed about that sort of thing, but that's like why I am the way that I am, because number one, I had to be able to recognize at an early age, like when I was safe.
Yeah.
You know, I had to learn how to read people and what their intentions were. And is this person like who they say they are? And like, you know, if I'm in a bad environment, like who can I lean on? It's like, can at least like protect me for a little bit. And again, just growing up like that, you know, it's just, I think, given me the strength to be able to be who I am today. But not only that, is to be able to help other people.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, you know, they say your biggest strength is also your biggest weakness.
Without a doubt.
You know, and sometimes I, you know, want to like help.
Over leverage your help.
Yeah.
To the point, you know, where it's a detriment to you.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's kind of been somewhat of my story, you know, and who I am today. You know, it's a big part of my life. You know, obviously growing up with somebody in your family that's a heroin addict, you know, and those reoccurring themes, you know, there's a backstory there.
Yeah. Everybody has a backstory.
Yeah.
Most people try to hide it, you know, like it's cool that you're able to share some of that, and you're at a point where you understand the power in sharing that, the power in owning your past, the power in saying, hey, I am a barber, right? Yeah. Like trying to give individuals permission to be proud of who they are, where they came from. Like, dude, that story is very, very powerful.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I was drawn in.
Yeah.
I was just like,
yeah. Well, it's weird, man. Yeah. So when I was, it's kind of funny, and you know, I don't want to like, oh, the barber, but when I became a barber, my dad was actually in prison at the time. And I ended up taking this job for this older gentleman. He was a Lebanese guy from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Paul. And I was going to go work at this shop that was one of my buddies. But for some reason, I was drawn to go check in on this shop. And I go to check in on this shop. There's this older man. He had these, you know, wingtip shoes on with slacks and a dress shirt. And he basically, I ended up working for him. And he took me under his wing. And that was like where I really learned like how to be a man, you know. And it was like some of the clients that would come into the shop where, you know, I would see how they treated their children and how to be a dad. And there, you know, I was in a tough period in my life, you know, in my early 20s. My dad had got out and I was just like pissed off.
Yeah.
You know, I was angry.
All my problems are because of you.
Yeah.
And how I grew up. You were a victim to how you grew up.
Correct, man. Yeah. And He had because he would like call from prison. I was living with my grandparents when he was in prison. He would call like, you know, this is a collect call from, you know, and I would just hang up. Yeah. And I would just hang up the phone.
Yeah.
Just angry,
you know? Yeah. And just angry at the world, man. And, but I had to like face that, you know, and I had to accept that him for who he was and realize that like his choices didn't necessarily have to determine my outcome.
Yeah.
You know, and I think for so long, like I was holding on to the things that maybe the shortcomings that I experienced in my life. Yeah. And rather than looking at those as negatives, I started seeing them as positives.
Yep.
And so again, it's just kind of weird how your life sort of at the time doesn't make sense. It's like a quilt, right? Yeah. Like you look at a quilt and on the other side of it, the threads look all messed up and it doesn't look like anything, but on the other side, and there's this intricate pattern. And, you know, sometimes we don't really understand the way that our life's being strung
weaved together.
Yeah. Yeah. And but it's all part of like the design of it and who you're supposed to be. And so,
And the end product's perfect, provided you're looking at it the right way.
Yeah.
Right. I know you didn't get that off the top of your head, bro. Did you read that in a book? The quilt.
Thing. I did.
I was gonna say there's
a book. It's the book is called The Grand Weaver.
The Grand Weaver.
Yeah, The Grand Weaver, and it's about like God and how you know sometimes you don't understand the journey that you're going through, but just knowing that
it has a purpose.
Yeah, because it doesn't feel right at the time, but when you look back and you're like, damn, like that. I see why that was supposed to be that way. You know, like when I missed your podcast last time, you know, I didn't understand at the time.
But now you have a book and you're just like, yo, go buy Donnie's book, and, you know?
Yeah, like, you know, so.
Like turn that into 2 to 8 sales a day rather than 1 to 3, you know?
Yeah.
So like going from rough childhood, like you found this guy that was like, you said, kind of a mentor.
Yeah.
Right. Was this an individual that was like purposefully mentoring you, or was it just kind of more by example? Like just being in the environment, you were pulling like hints and clues or information? Because I think everybody has an opportunity to have a mentor. It's just whether or not they're picking up the cues,
you know,
of those examples that are around them, right?
I think for me, it was kind of like a father figure, but you know, in full transparency, there's tons of people that mentor me that don't even realize it.
Yeah, you know
what I mean? Yeah. Like that's one thing that I've really learned in life is that you have to have examples. And so, I mean, it could be somebody as simple as like Jocko, right? Like in my head, like Jocko's my mentor just because I listen to his podcast. It doesn't necessarily mean I have to know him.
Yeah.
But there's things that I admire about the way he approaches things, and like he's my mentor, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think with, you know, again, and growing up that way and talking about having to understand where you're safe and who you can trust, and like you really learn to take the good qualities from people. And so I got really good at finding people that I can draw things in from them or learn from their experiences
and take what you respect from that individual and try to figure out how to weave it
into your own life, in doing that, also understanding that they're human and they make mistakes, and not putting people on
too high of a pedestal,
you know, and just and giving yourself the same grace as well, right? Like not holding yourself to too high of a standard, and understand that, like, dude, I'm gonna make mistakes, I'm gonna need to apologize to some people, I'm on the same journey that everybody else is, and that's why for me, like I feel horrible if I try to judge somebody, like it's like that's not my place to judge somebody.
Yeah. You know? Let's talk, if you're open about it, like kind of what recently happened and how it kind of changed your perspective with your marriage and all that with the birth of your last child, right? Yeah, because sometimes, you know, that's like something that appears to be negative.
Yeah.
That ends up, you know, being something that is a positive, right? Because it helps, you know, shift your perspective.
Yeah. It, you know, it's funny, man, how that whole thing transpired. And, you know, I was one of the guys that didn't get the vaccine, right? And because I didn't get the vaccine.
Likewise.
Yeah, but because I didn't get it, the doctor that I was scheduled with I was actually scheduled to get a vasectomy. And, they were like, hey, we can't see you because you're not vaccinated. So I was like, all right, well. And in the meantime, I was training for this fight. I had a jiu-jitsu fight coming up. And so I was training for that. Well, I was like, well, I'll just wait until I get done with the tournament, and then I will get the vaccine. So I scheduled it get the vasectomy.
Yeah.
I'll schedule it after the tournament. So I did. Well, between that time and the the vasectomy, my wife got pregnant. And we were done having children, man. And she was like, one day I get home, she's like, hey, we need to talk. And I was like, oh shit. Like, I can
tell. What did I do now?
Yeah. I was like, man, like,
it's like, damn. This, yeah, it was, you know, one of those, when it's, we
need
to
talk. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I barely walked in the door. Yeah. I was like, we need to talk. And so we,
like,
we
I'll go take this trash out. I swear to God. And,
yeah.
And she's like, I swear to you, I forgot this week.
Yeah. Yeah. And she, you know, she tells me, she's like, hey, I think I'm pregnant. And, you know, typical guy response. I was like, well, let's just wait and see. You know, like, have you taken some tests?
Maybe you're just late.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Oh, dude, totally just dropping the ball there. And it was real. She was really pregnant. Yeah. And so, yeah, man, going into, you know, everything that transpired was we go through the, we get a doula, you know, because we were to help with the delivery.
Yeah.
You know, she goes into birth, and we have a amazing, the birth process was amazing. It went really well. It was, you know, everything was like timed very good. She labored at home. The baby comes out, you know, and we're like, great. And as soon as the baby came out, I noticed there was like a lot of blood coming out and below. And with our second child, she had lost some blood and they had to give her a transfusion. Yeah. So I told the doctor, I said, hey, do you guys have like some blood available? Because I, you know, she's like, oh, this is normal. Well, the blood's not stopping. And so like now that they have like a bucket and it's just like filling up, and it started getting serious.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm pretty concerned, you know, I'm actually holding the baby at this point. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to stitch my wife up, and they think it was her, they thought it was her.
It's the tear.
Is it the uterus or the? What is the thing that keeps the placenta, where it keeps like putting the blood out, whatever? Well, they're like trying to compress.
We ain't no doctors, bro.
We got a bunch of dudes in here.
Sales guys, you know, fucking hustlers.
Yeah.
You know.
Luke's over here nodding like, yeah, it's the.
Yeah. I concur. It's whatever you're about to say, you know.
But the blood's not stopping.
Yeah.
And the next thing they do is the doctor calls for a code white. And it was like people just come from everywhere, like come rushing in. And I'm like,
at your home?
No, this is, we
you can do the natural births at the hospital.
And yeah, and so they come rushing in, and right away they're giving her blood, they're working on her, and they go, hey, we have to rush her into the operating room.
Yeah.
And so they wheel her out. And so I was in a room with like 15, 20 people. I mean, it was just packed.
Yeah.
And like before I know it, it's just me and the baby. And I'm standing in the room and I'm holding the baby that was, you know, our son that was just born. And I'm like looking around. I'm like, man, this isn't good. You know, and
doesn't take a rocket scientist at that moment to know something's up.
And the, you know, us, right. You get into these high pressure situations and you immediately start looking for like people and who. And so I spotted one guy when everybody was in there that was like calm and collective. Mm. He was the anesthesiologist, you know? And so when everybody had rushed out, he had come back in to get his meds. And I was like, hey, man, like, how bad is it? You know? And he was like, it's pretty serious, you know? And, so the nurse, they take us out of the room, and the nurse comes in crying. And, you know, this is the nurse that's doing the delivery. And, you know, she's like crying. She's like, we never want this to happen. And I'm like, well, shit, like, what the fuck? You know, like, is she dying or like, is it just, and, she was dying, you know, they couldn't stop the bleeding. And so I was like, what do I do? Like, you know, I didn't know what to do at that point. So I actually texted Trevor and I was like, hey, can you hop on a call? And you thankfully picked up, you know, and we got on a call and you kind of helped me shorten the goal, I think, a little bit, and just start finding some positives and just focusing on some things. And I think while we were on the call, the nurse came back and had said that they had found the location where the bleeding was coming from, but they still couldn't stop it. So in reading the notes from the hospital that we got later, I mean, they had done like a full resuscitation on her. They'd given her, they threw everything at her. I think the average person had like, I don't know, like 4 pints of blood or something for an average 150-pound person. And she's like 115 pounds. They had given her like 5, right? She had lost everything in her body. Going into that night, they still didn't know if she was going to make it. Mm-hmm. They just were, they put her in the ICU and they basically packed her up because that was the only time they can get the bleeding to stop or slow. And they ended up having her on like a breathing machine. And it was just, man, it was one of the most traumatic experiences going through. And, you know, like I always give people a hard time, like, man, like, why are you so hung up on the past, you know? And like after that experience and going through that, like I started getting like a little PTSD, you know, and like I kept replaying it and like replaying it. And thankfully she made it through and recovered really well. I mean, we were in the hospital for a while, but yeah, man, I mean, when you go through something like that and that close to death, you know, and it gives you a different outlook, you know, and a different bit of gratitude, you know. Just today, this morning, I was on the beach and I put, you know, grateful for life, love, and all of the above, you know. And and when I say that, I really mean that because I like, I'm so grateful for just life, you know, and because in a split second, it could be taken away.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of people that don't have that same luxury. You know, there's people that, you know, lose their children and, you know, parents and siblings and spouses. And then there's a whole slew of people that act like to tomorrow's promise, man. Yeah. They just live their life like it's just like not only just not concerned with
anything,
but not even living their life with value and meaning. And like, how are you going to be the best person that you can today? You know, like it's just amazes me.
So I guess it begs the question, did the snip finally happen?
It did.
It did. He finally made it to the bus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's not going to be a fourth.
No, we're done. Yeah. Yeah. Not only did the snip happen, my wife was actually in the room with me when they were doing it. And the nurse was like just trying to like small talk while the doctor's in there working. And I'm like fully exposed. They're doing their thing. And I was just like,
you were big Donnie D.
I just looked at, but like the nurse is like talking about like her favorite coffee or something, you know, like something like so. And I'm just like, had that look like,
shut up.
Yeah.
She's like, I like dick caffeinated. I mean, decaffeinated. Like, big Donnie D in the room. Yeah.
I like mine with cream. Apparently there's no children listening to this podcast.
I don't have as many dick jokes as you guys.
You only do that when you're like you're like what is it, like it's the opposite, right, where you're like trying to overcompensate.
I think that's it, dude. I think we're gonna need to wrap her up.
I was giving him shit down there. I was like, bro, Matt had some great stories. You better bring the heat. But you did, bro. This was some amazing stories.
He's a storyteller.
Oh, dude, I actually, I remember you telling me a little bit about your dad, but I didn't know the story in that depth, man. I was like literally picturing, it's literally me being a scared little kid, like, oh, my dad, you know?
Yeah,
you know,
put us right there with you, bro.
I love my dad, man. He's such a good dude, man. He has a great heart. He's lived a challenging life, you know, and still.
Where is he now?
He lives in California, you know, he's clean right now. And, he lives with my grandmother, takes care of her. And, he's got a good heart, man. But you know, most people with good hearts, like also they battle, you know, and his battle's been that, you know? And so, but I love him. I don't hold any grudges or or anything like that. So.
Oh, dude, you've gained a lot of wisdom from him.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I have to do that in my gratitude with my dad too. Cause there's like, a lot of times where I've been like, why wouldn't you give me better like wisdom or advice in life? Like, you know, and I'm just like, oh, well, he gave me so much wisdom and just like even the things I didn't agree with or, you know, things that I didn't get that I felt like I needed. Right. Yeah. It's like, so,
you know, what's weird though about that whole thing is like now that I'm a dad, you know, it's like try to protect my children from so much, which is weird because. Yeah. Those experiences are what made me who I am, but yet I don't want my children to go through or go without. It's
I tell my sister this all the time. I'm like, I don't care how perfect you try to parent, you're gonna fuck your kid up.
Yeah,
everybody fucks their kids up.
Well, I think it's the perspective also of the kid, right? Like they need something to blame something on. Yeah. Like even if they grow up in a wonderful. You know,
Silver spoon.
They're like, dude, my fucking parents, they gave me everything I wanted. Like, dude, I've never had to work for it, dude. And it really fucked me up.
Yeah.
You know, like we can always find something to blame something on.
Yeah.
Right. Or we could look at the positives and be like, well, I know not to do this or this, or now I'm more resilient, or, you know, because I had a silver spoon, I watched how hard they had to work in order to create the silver. Like there's always a silver lining. There's always something positive. And it's a perspective issue, right? Like if you never change your perspective, you always remain the victim to, you know, your upbringing, right? When you actually want something better, your perspective changes, you pull the positives, and then you move on with your life, right?
That's why you should never compare yourself to other people in that area, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you can compare yourself to people and be like, well, man, if they did it, I can do it, right? Like, you know, you're a human with the same abilities, but like, you really shouldn't compare your lives, you know, because you really don't know what those people's problems are, dude. Like, someone literally that did get the silver spoon could be suffering just as hard as somebody who was a fucking heroin addict. Their parent was freaking abusive to him, right? Just two different types of suffering, but like equal amount of suffering, right?
But if you think about it, and somebody doesn't ever have to work for anything, like, that can't feel good deep down.
Yeah.
Like, how do you get self-worth if they're not ever having to overcome anything, right? Like, that's kind of where self-worth comes from. What have you overcome?
Yeah.
Right? And so, like, they're taking the opportunity for that individual to become something.
Yeah, stripping them of that agency.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Yeah, their parents might have been like, don't worry about all that. Like, we're just going to, you know, pamper you.
It's amazing. Dude, listen, man, I appreciate you guys having me on, man.
Dude, it's our pleasure, man. Yeah. You know, honestly, dude.
Dude, you are a good storyteller, though.
Yeah, you are.
I could sit in your chair for an hour once a week and get chopped up by you.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely. You know? Well, you know what's funny is, as a barber, you actually get really good at hearing but not listening sometimes. Like I'll be talking to my wife. She's like, "You're doing it." And I'm like, "What?" She's like, "You're giving me the barber listen." Because I'm like, yeah. And then I can like hear it enough to repeat it back, whatever she said.
Yeah, you hear, but I wasn't really taking
You give them a part of your brain, but you're over here fucking off. Like, totally.
Well, did I put a number two on this blade right now?
Did you give us your full attention today, or did we get the barber brain?
We're all human, bro, and we do that, you know, because sometimes our minds literally are just focused on other things. But the reason that you are becoming the authority that you are in the barber space is because you figured out that people are your greatest asset. Yeah. Your relationship is really what's most important. Yeah. You're teaching other people in barber chair that that's what's most valuable, because I see it too, dude. Like, I don't know anything about the barber industry, but I see the clips that come up on the shorts and the YouTube, you know, might be one guy fucking barber chopping somebody with a meat cleaver on a cutting board, and they're just trying to get attention, right? But like, you've tapped into like what's really important, like you know, not just getting a bunch of attention for some whatever.
You know, like, what's funny is, like, in the barber space, you know, like, you've officially made it when you've like cut a celebrity, you know, like that's the pinnacle, right? Yeah. Like, I cut so and so's hair, and obviously everybody wants to cut the star athlete's hair. And you guys remember Cam Newton, the football player for the Carolina Panthers? Yeah. And like, this was like when he was in his prime. Now, I didn't cut Cam Newton's hair, okay? So I'm just sharing that up front. But I'm sure there were plenty of barbers that wanted to cut his hair.
Yeah.
I was cutting the guy's hair that financed the owner of the Carolina Panthers to buy the football team.
Mm.
Right? So, like, again, here's guys that their pinnacle
is an athlete.
And I'm cutting the guy's hair that financed.
Guys, like three layers
that owns Cam Newton's contract.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
He was actually the executor.
Owner, and then,
he was actually the executor of the estate for the Carolina Panthers. Well, and if you, in my book, I have a dedication to him. He's one of my mentors. When we talk about mentoring, like, I don't need to have this insignificant relationship and have people think, when I'm talking about cutting like an athlete, you know, and think that like, oh, I'm this big barber, this makes me who I am. No, I built a relationship with this man that I've learned so much in life about, that when I have questions on being a dad or business questions or financial questions, I can call him or text him, and we have that really good relationship.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So, dude, that's amazing. That's another hack, bro. For people relationship coming into building. The barber, it's like, bro, like, what are you going to do with that relationship? Cause like, some of them you need to pour into them to get to, you know, to like, to give value. And some of them you need to like be willing to receive. Like, you got someone like that in your chair, it's like, whoa, man, like,
you know,
what can I learn from this person? You don't necessarily take from them, but what can I learn from them? Right.
You know, what's crazy is when I first started cutting his hair, I cringe when I think about this. He would get in my chair And
now you could teach people what not to do.
I know, man. Yeah. Learn for the, you know, but he would fly into, he owned a vineyard where my shop was. And so he would fly in every 3 months or so. And he, you know, I'd cut his hair. And I admired him so much. And early on that I was like trying to show off for him. Mm-hmm. So he would sit in my chair and he wouldn't say anything because I was so busy talking when I should have been
telling
doing
him how great
what?
You are
listening.
Yeah.
And thankfully I was wise enough to wake up and be like, man, let me like ask him like, man, when you do. And I started asking a lot of questions. Then he started opening up and I was like, what an idiot, man. Like what an idiot. And then I think back, like how many opportunities did I totally fuck up because I was too busy talking when I should have been listening, you know? And I just, you know, I've really developed into being a great listener. And again, it's why I'm in the mastermind, right? Because I want to be able to listen and hear other perspectives and other than my own. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, bro, how do people get a hold of you, bro?
With a bomb like
that,
bro.
Yeah, absolutely. You keep putting a little bit more icing on top of the cake. How many layers are you going
to
put on this?
Well, I'm trying to keep
bro?
This podcast going. I don't know when this is going to happen. You guys may not have it again, right?
Hey, so. It only took 13 months to happen, so it might as well be a 13-hour podcast, bro. We can just keep chopping it up,
my wife
bro.
Takes me again.
Kale's got a hot appointment to get to.
He's got some hot stones to be put on his back. Some massages.
They want to get a hold of me. Obviously, they got to go through you.
I'm his agent.
Trevor's his agent.
Reach out to me.
Yeah, he's got plenty of free time on his hands. Just shoot Trevor a text.
Reach out to me.
No, you can get me on Instagram
for real. If you want to DM me, I'll drop you his phone number. You can text him, call him, get it.
That was you that wrote my number and Papa's and beer in the bathroom stall.
That was yesterday, bro. I knew you were gonna be there later that night. I said, be back tonight. Text me if you're gonna be at the Soldier Boy concert.
Yeah, I'll have the black shirt.
That would be a fun
That's why I'm wearing a white
nowadays.
Shirt today because I was traumatized last night. Yeah, I'm never wearing a black shirt again. Yeah. Just on Instagram, Donnie Joseph, Donnie.Joseph, Donnie.Joseph, Joseph. No blue check mark.
We'll get it, dude. It's only $15, bro.
Yeah.
A month.
I know. Yeah. $15 a month.
Yeah. I actually started the process. For it, so.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Well, it told me I was available on Instagram. So I'm like, okay, I'll do it. So, but Instagram and Facebook obviously are owned by Facebook, but I'm not available to have it on Facebook yet. And I'm like, that's so weird. Do I got to pay another $15? Yeah. Am I going to pay $30 a month?
Maybe that's their
double
dipping right there. So.
God, they're going to make so much money off
that. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah. That was a fun podcast.
Yeah.
You're a great storyteller.
Reach out to
Big Donnie D if you have any questions in the DMs.
Yeah, man.
We hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you're rating, reviewing. Until next week, guys, keep kicking ass.